Cumberland College, Lebanon, Tennessee, 1915. Georgia Tech was losing, badly. It was the sixth inning and they were down by double digits. They were playing at Cumberland College, a small Presbyterian law school in the Appalachian foothills. This was a game that the much larger Georgia Tech expected to win, but nothing they did seemed to work. Cumberland's pitchers tossed blazing fastballs, their batters racked up home run after home run. Georgia Tech, a good team, simply could not keep up. The coach of Georgia Tech, John Heisman, was furious. He knew something was amiss. He noticed the fullness of the stubble on Cumberland's catcher. A Georgia Tech player said he overheard one of their opponents talking about his children. How many college kids had graying temples? It didn't add up. These were ringers. John Heisman called timeout. He rushed up to the umpires and accused the opposing coach, George Allen, of using professional players in Cumberland uniforms. The Nashville Volunteers, the nearby professional baseball team, just happened to have a bye that day. George Allen, a round-faced law student who also doubled as Cumberland's athletic director, denied everything. Heisman yelled over to the massive Cumberland batter, "Who's your favorite professor at Cumberland College?" He remained silent over the plate. This was far before college ID cards and official rosters. Heisman had no concrete proof. So, the umpire ordered the game to continue. Heisman seethed. By the last two innings, the Cumberland Ringers got bored and simply bunted on every pitch. They still scored three more times. The final score was 22-0. John Heisman glared from the dugout. One day, in a different sport, he would get his revenge. I'm Jake Barton. Welcome to Historium. This is episode 78, The Blowout. John Heisman started out as a theater nerd. He won leading roles in school plays and could often be found quoting Shakespeare. But once he discovered American football, he was hooked. He played lineman despite his small frame, and his determination was unmatched. He often drew up plays in his notebooks and pitched them to his college coaches before practice. He was obsessed. His father, a strict German immigrant, detested football and never actually watched his son play, calling the game bestial. Heisman continued playing football in college. Sports writer Edwin Pope described him as, quote, a 158-pound center in constant dread that his immediate teammates, guards weighing 212 and 243, would fall on him, unquote. Heisman never played any of the skill positions like halfback or quarterback because of his notoriously poor eyesight. He only graduated law school because they allowed him to take the exam orally. After college, Heisman transitioned seamlessly from player to coach. His first gig was the head coach of Oberlin College, and he completely transformed their team. After his first season, the Oberlin School newspaper wrote, quote, Mr. Heisman has entirely remade our football program. He has taught us scientific football, unquote. Heisman quickly found himself a hot commodity, especially as football became more and more popular across the country. Wherever Heisman went, success followed. He climbed the coaching ladder, leading football teams for more prestigious universities each year. John Heisman's personality was a force to be reckoned with. Heisman once said, quote, the coach should be masterful and commanding, even dictatorial. He has no time to say please or mister. At times, he must be severe, arbitrary, little short of a czar, unquote. He always used a megaphone at practice so his commands would travel farther. He often quoted Shakespeare and sometimes spoke in an English accent in pregame speeches. One of his assistant coaches said of Heisman, his voice was deep, his diction perfect, his tone biting. In a recurring training camp speech, Heisman, holding up a football, said, quote, what is this? It is a prolate spheroid, an elongated sphere in which the outer leather casing is drawn tightly over a somewhat smaller rubber tubing. Better to have died a small boy than to fumble this football. Unquote. His stern personality was only topped by his tactical brilliance. It is impossible to overstate John Heisman's contributions to the game of football. He was a massive part in innovating the game into the blockbuster sport it is today. When you watch a football game now, you'll see the score. But in addition to the score, you'll see the down, yardage to gain, and time remaining, all Heisman's ideas. Universities across the country had to renovate their scoreboards. To start the play, the quarterback will yell something like "hut" or "hike," Heisman's invention. Then perhaps the quarterback will throw the football forward to a designated receiver. That's right, John Heisman invented the forward pass. Now, maybe the quarterback wanted to start farther back to give him a better view of the field. Shotgun formation. Heisman pioneered that too. Hand signals, pulling guards, audibles. Heisman, Heisman, Heisman. Each year, there is a trophy awarded to the best collegiate football player in the country. That trophy's name? You've probably heard of it. The Heisman Trophy. So when George Allen of Cumberland College hired ringers to humiliate Georgia Tech, he may have handily won a baseball game, but he had angered a football god. Cumberland College was never great at sports. They produced lawyers and preachers, not athletes. But they still fielded baseball, basketball, and football teams when they had enough interest. Their football team was by far the worst. A conservative reverend served as football coach despite fundamentally disagreeing with the sport itself due to its extreme violence. One of his main drills had the team sit in a circle and close their eyes. He then hid the ball behind one of the players and then, like a hit-and-roll game of Mafia or Werewolf, let the team debate and guess who had the ball behind them. Needless to say, these drills didn't help the team play football. Their win-loss record was abysmal, and the athletic department discontinued the team prior to the next season. However, some paperwork was either lost or didn't arrive on time, leading to some divisional college football programs still having Cumberland on their schedule. Every college program merely adjusted their schedule or gained an additional bye week when they eventually found out that Cumberland no longer had a team. Every college program except Georgia Tech. While in his office in Cumberland's modest athletic department, George Allen received a troubling letter. It read, quote, "I hereby offer you the sum of $500 and an all-expenses-paid trip to Atlanta for your football team on the condition that you honor your contract by participating in and completing the Cumberland Georgia Tech football game. However, if this offer is refused, I shall be forced to demand that your school reimburse the Tech Athletic Department in the amount of $3,000 for losses from the projected net gate receipts. Sincerely yours, John W. Heisman, Head Football Coach, Georgia School of Technology." Unquote. Allen's eyes widened. Cumberland College had disbanded their football team. And adjusted for inflation, this was an $80,000 threat. Cumberland College's measly athletic department absolutely did not have that money to spare. George Allen was a law student, and he knew Heisman had a case against them. But perhaps there was an opportunity here. Since the college had disbanded the football team, that $500 would go right in George Allen's pockets. Allen only needed to assemble a team. That week, George Allen targeted the largest and most athletic men he could and asked them to play a single game of football. Most said no. Upon lowering his expectations, he finally had some takers. Allen went to each fraternity on campus, pitching all-expenses-paid trip to Atlanta, one game, $500. Some accepted simply because they had never ridden a train before. He then called in favors and started twisting arms. Coercion got the final few on board. However, George Allen knew he couldn't hold football meetings or practices out in the open. The football program was officially disbanded, and if the Cumberland higher-ups heard about the secret team, they would either disband it and pay the fine, resulting in a gutting of the athletic department, or they would want the entirety of the $500 for the school itself. George Allen had already promised a sizable cut of that $500 to players to even get them to join the team. So he held the meetings in secret and held practices outside school grounds. Under the guise of a new men's choir, George Allen led meetings in the Cumberland Church basement. He started by assigning positions and drawing up plays. He quickly had to backtrack to teaching the very basics. Many of the rookies had never even seen a game of football played before. He finally settled on an unorthodox means of calling plays. Each player was assigned a vegetable. Tomato, carrot, eggplant, cabbage, broccoli. The play would then be called something like cauliflower to cucumber or cabbage over lima bean. Georgia Tech might crack their code by halftime, but it would have to do. Next was the matter of uniforms. They had none. So, George Allen planned a heist. The next night, Allen and three other Cumberland players snuck into Castle Heights, the local high school. Once they infiltrated the gymnasium, they raided the lockers for uniforms. The high school had played the day before, so the unwashed jerseys stank to high heaven. The four burglars, plugging their noses, disappeared into the night, lugging sacks of dirty high school football jerseys. Once safely back at choir practice, George Allen divvied up the jerseys. Most didn't fit well at all. Whenever a player complained, George Allen sung his old refrain, "One game, $500. The next morning, the secret Cumberland College football team gathered at the train station. George Allen paced in the team's passenger car as the train lurched to life and left the station. Three of his players missed the train. The train ride was largely uneventful, but the Cumberland players were having the time of their lives. Those who had never ridden on a train before looked out the windows, slack-jawed at the speed of the moving countryside. Some players gathered in a corner and played poker, wistfully describing what they were going to do with their cut of the $500. Others argued whether their country should join the ongoing Great War in Europe, and on which side. All the while, George Allen dutifully wrote up plays, constantly fielding questions about the very basics of football. The next day, they would play against the greatest football team on the planet. John Heisman finally returned to his office long after sunset. He had been in several athletic department meetings, then ran a strict, regimented practice with the Georgia Tech football team. They were currently on a 33-game winning streak that had lasted over 4 years. Everything was going according to plan. He sat down in his chair and scowled down at the newspaper atop his desk. He turned to the sports section. Heisman had an awful distaste for sports writers, but read their drivel nonetheless. Heisman especially hated their system of ranking teams based on how many points they scored versus how many points were scored against them. While point differential mattered for some sports, it mattered little in football. Most coaches pulled their starters from the game if they were handily ahead, and due to respect for the game, teams felt like driving up the score by piling up points was just bad sportsmanship. And yet, there was the point differential listed right in the column. Sitting at number one was Georgia Tech. They just won their first game against Mercer, 61-0. Imagine what they could do to a bad team. Heisman's eyes wandered to a comic illustration in the sports section. He flashed a rare smile. The drawing was of a new vehicle utilized in the Great War, called a tank. The tank, labeled Georgia Tech, had enormous treads and several cannons pointing every which way. It was drawn breaking through the lines of barbed wire and easily rolling over trenches. The illustration was titled, "The Southern Tank." The next trench was Cumberland College.
I'm a rambling wreck from Georgia Tech and a hell of an engineer. A hell of 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 an engineer. Like all good jolly fellows, I drink my whiskey clear. I'm a rambling wreck from Georgia Tech and a hell of an engineer.
George Allen and his ragtag Cumberland team arrived in Atlanta around sunset. They departed from the train station and checked in at Georgia Tech. Coach Heisman provided excellent accommodations, letting the Cumberland players stay in a newly constructed dormitory. They checked in for the night to prepare for the game tomorrow. They were stunned at the steam rising from the faucet. This was the first time any of them had seen hot running water. The next day, Cumberland suited up. Some of the players forgot to clean their used high school uniforms. Some bore the pungent smell and mud stains, while others tried desperately to clean the uniforms in the fancy hot water faucets. They ran out of time, so took the field in wet jerseys. When the Cumberland team entered Grant Field on Georgia Tech's sprawling campus, they were stunned. The turf was perfect, not a stray weed in sight. The lines painted on the field were immaculate. On either side of the field stood towering stands filled to the brim with Tech fans. The Cumberland squad warmed up in the middle of the field. Some even tried to show off to the largest crowd they'd ever seen. The murmurs in the crowd rose to a roar as the Georgia Tech team entered the arena. The entire Cumberland team stopped their warm-ups and stared. George Allen had warned them that Heisman's players would look fierce, but repeated his, one game, $500. But this was the first time some of the Cumberland players realized they had made a huge mistake. Each Georgia Tech player was huge, broad shoulders, barrel-chested, and a full head taller on average than the Cumberland players. They came out in a perfect single-file line and swarmed in a circle around the visiting team until they formed a ring. The circle of jogging Georgia Tech players got smaller and smaller, forcing the Cumberland team to bunch up into a tight group. One Cumberland player audibly whimpered. John Heisman, entering last, never took his eyes off of George Allen, who nearly dropped his notebook. Without a word, the Georgia Tech team concluded their intimidating war dance and headed for their side of the field. In exact sync with Heisman's whistle, they performed military-style drills, one after the other. The Cumberland team gazed in amazement. After their brief warm-ups concluded, the Georgia Tech players returned to the locker room single file. Heisman continued to glare at Allen until the very moment he left the field. It was customary for teams to warm up, then return to the locker room, before going back out onto the field to start the game. But George Allen elected not to go back into the locker room, since he was afraid his players would refuse to come back onto the field. Allen tried to muster an encouraging speech, but after seeing his defensive end visibly shaking from fear, he instead fell back on his old mantra, one game, $500. John Heisman's pregame locker room speech was equally short. Remember that baseball game? George Allen thought of ways to delay or forfeit the game without technically breaking the contract. He came up with nothing. Meanwhile, the Cumberland team looked like line infantry in a trench, waiting for their orders to go over the top. The refs met in the middle of the perfectly manicured field and signaled for team captains to approach for the coin toss. A gargantuan Georgia Tech player stepped forward. Cumberland's team captain took a few steps before turning around and jogging back to his sidelines. George Allen grabbed him and turned him back around. Cumberland's captain, 5'6", timidly approached the refs. Georgia Tech won the coin toss, but elected to kick it to the visiting team. As Georgia Tech's kicker set up the ball, the Cumberland players stepped backwards, seemingly offering up running lanes for the opposing team. They adjusted their thin leather helmets. A couple of Cumberland players shivered in their ill-fitting wet uniforms. The Georgia Tech defenders took off in pursuit, the ground shaking as they charged. One Cumberland player collapsed to the ground, another simply left the field. Any brave Cumberland player who decided to block was summarily pancaked. The kick was excellent, and the ball landed a few yards away from the nearest Cumberland player, who picked up the ball and then got obliterated by two Georgia Tech players. Cumberland lined up in their simple offensive formation. Eddie Edwards, the most competent of the visiting bunch, played quarterback. As the one bright spot on the dismal team, George Allen had hope in him. The center snapped the ball. Every Georgia Tech defensive lineman immediately shed their blocks and pounced on Edwards. George Allen couldn't bear watching, so he turned away. When he finally regained his composure, he turned back and saw his men slowly getting up. Everyone except Edwards. He had been knocked out cold. His star quarterback had to be carried off the field. The next play, Cumberland snapped the ball quickly and ran it up the gut for a hard-earned 3-yard gain. It was now third down, but at least they gained yards. some of the Cumberland players actually felt hope it would be the last time. The next play was a botched handoff resulting in a dozen-man dogpile. Slowly, players removed themselves from the pile, one by one, eventually revealing the crumpled ball carrier embedded in the turf. He barely managed to limp off the field. On the punt, the center, fearing the opposing defensive lineman, lined up 7 yards behind the actual line of scrimmage before snapping it. The Cumberland punter botched the punt, which only gained them about a dozen yards of field position. The Georgia Tech quarterback had played catcher against Cumberland's baseball ringers, so he too harbored an enormous grudge and set out for revenge. He received the snap, then handed the ball off to Georgia Tech's All-American award-winning running back. He blew past 2 Cumberland defenders for an easy touchdown. Several Cumberland players were slow to get up after being de-cleated by blockers. George Allen desperately tried to rally his troops, saying, "We're down 7, but up 500. Cumberland got the ball back. Coach Allen called the play, turnip over carrot. The Cumberland running back dodged 1 Georgia Tech defender, but was annihilated by the second. He hit the ground, but the ball advanced without him. The fumble bounced 2 times before a Georgia Tech player scooped it up and returned it for a touchdown. The crowd went wild, and the band erupted in song as the home team went up 14-0. Cumberland got the ball back, and Georgia Tech decided that down 2 scores, it was time to get creative. He called radish over cucumber comeback to squash. Upon hearing the play, the players just stood there dazed before the quarterback broke the huddle. No one knew what the play meant. The quarterback snapped the ball and turned to hand it off to cucumber and or squash in a sort of double reverse. However, all 3 players slammed into each other during the handoff, and the ball once again popped up into the air. A Georgia Tech defensive lineman caught it and was promptly tackled by the Cumberland offense-turned-defense. Georgia Tech scored immediately on their subsequent offensive play. The score was now 21-0. The next drive, Cumberland fearfully elected to punt on 2nd down. On the punt return, Georgia Tech's returner made it back to the opposing 1-yard line, but he wasn't tackled. No, Cumberland's players actually dove out of the way of the bruising runner, who instead of running it in for yet another touchdown, purposefully fell to his knees. 1st and goal at the 1. The Georgia Tech offense lined up with a new player in the backfield, Canty Alexander. Alexander was the smallest of the Georgia Tech team and had ridden the bench for 4 years. He was more of a water boy, team mascot type, but he had always dreamt of scoring a touchdown. Now was his chance, but the Georgia Tech players planned a prank. Once the ball was snapped, every Georgia Tech player hit the grass and laid prone, laughing. The Cumberland players had a perfect opportunity to tackle Alexander for a loss, but instead, they too mimicked the offense and laid down. This left Alexander as the only man standing. However, he fumbled the snap and the ball fell to the ground. Then, as he was attempting to pick it up, he accidentally kicked the ball 3 more times before finally falling on the football in the end zone for his long-awaited touchdown. Coach Heisman smiled for just a moment before returning to his usual scowl. He reprimanded his players for laughing too much and ordered the massacre to continue. By the end of the 1st quarter, it was 63-0. By the middle of the 2nd, George Allen truly had to fight to keep his players on the field. He desperately needed a glimmer of hope. That spark came when Cumberland received the kickoff and the overeager Georgia Tech team actually overshot their coverage. Suddenly, the Cumberland returner had nothing but open grass ahead of him. Cumberland had yet to pass midfield, and a touchdown seemed unthinkable. The returner sprinted as fast as he could and turned back to see if he was being pursued. As he turned, he tripped over his teammate, who was on the ground looking for his glasses. On the sidelines, Coach George Allen decided his injured star quarterback Edwards was finally ready for duty, since he had regained consciousness. He stood him up from the bench and told him the play, potato over turnip. The quarterback neither nodded nor shook his head, only stared back at Allen with a dazed look. Coach Allen sent him in, showing what we now know today are obvious concussion symptoms. The quarterback could barely walk in a straight line and couldn't even remember the play. But the Cumberland offense lined up anyway. The impatient center eventually snapped the ball to the concussed quarterback. The ball hit his head, knocking him, once again, unconscious. Georgia Tech recovered the ball and scored. So far, George Allen's star quarterback Eddie Edwards has taken the field two times. He has been dragged off the field unconscious two times. For the next 39 plays, the ball never left the Cumberland red zone. On one kickoff in the second quarter, Georgia Tech's kicker really drilled it. The ball soared over the field before falling right onto Cumberland's return man, who panicked. The ball bounced off his shoulder and popped up into the air, where it was caught by the very man who kicked the ball. Georgia Tech's kicker ran it into the end zone. From all my research, this is the only time in NFL or college football history that a kicker received their own kick for a touchdown. At halftime, the score was Georgia Tech 126, Cumberland 0. If the game ended there, it would already be the biggest blowout in the last 100 years. Georgia Allen looked around at his team. They were broken physically, emotionally, and spiritually. But Cumberland had fulfilled their end of the bargain. They showed up. Georgia Tech sold their tickets. Perhaps Heisman would agree to end the game there. George Allen walked across the field and prepared to ask a football god for mercy. Allen approached in the middle of Heisman's halftime speech. He bellowed, quote, "You're doing all right, team. We're ahead. But you just can't tell what those Cumberland players have up their sleeves. They may spring a surprise. Be alert, men. Hit 'em clean, but hit 'em hard." Unquote. Once a moment presented itself, George Allen timidly walked up to Heisman and practically begged for the game to be shortened. Coach Heisman, in an act almost more cruel than simply saying no, agreed. The game would be shortened by 5 minutes. George Allen returned to the Cumberland sidelines with the news. In a motivational miracle, the Cumberland team somehow prepared for the shortened second half. "Already over halfway to $500, Coach Allen yelled. Georgia Tech's massacre continued in full force. For Georgia Tech, touchdown after touchdown. For Cumberland, turnover after turnover. One of the players insisted he had to go to the bathroom, but never returned. George Allen sent another player to fetch him. That player also did not return. In the middle of the third quarter, George Allen was running out of men, so he put a young law student named Pee-wee in the backfield with two other backs. Pee-wee had been promised he would not have to touch the ball. However, on the next play, the center snapped the football to the wrong person. That person was Pee-wee. Pee-wee ran one way, then another, before completely panicking. He flung the ball to the side and ran off the field. He was the fifth Cumberland player to flee the field so far. Pee-wee quickly climbed the fence behind the end zone, but was thrown back over by two other Cumberland players who didn't want him to ruin their hiding spot. Pee-wee, with nowhere to run, was ushered back onto the field by George Allen. With the aid of smelling salts, Cumberland's star quarterback Edwards was once again conscious. Coach Allen decided that that was good enough for him to return to action. Edwards stumbled back onto the field. This time he managed to catch the snap, but in a sudden moment of clarity, Edwards' eyes widened as he realized the precarious situation he was in. With Georgia Tech's defensive line bearing down on him, he pitched the ball to the running back. But that wasn't the play, so the running back pitched it back. Edwards tossed it back again. Both players backpedaled, continuing to pitch the ball back and forth. Eventually, Georgia Tech's defense swallowed them both, recovering the ensuing fumble for a touchdown. Edwards was carried off the field, unconscious, for a third time. Near the end of the third quarter, a stray dog wandered onto the field and growled at whoever approached it. The game was put on hold while staff corralled the dog off the field. At George Allen's urging, the referees graciously let the game clock run. At the start of the shortened fourth quarter, George Allen thought surely at this point Heisman would relent. He thought wrong. John Heisman, up 180 points, sent out Georgia Tech's starters. It was scorched earth. No quarter, no mercy. By this point, Cumberland's players, limping and moaning, were just doing their best to survive. On one kickoff, the Cumberland return team simply collapsed in unison after the kick. George Allen did everything he could to coax players back onto the field. However, in the midst of this historic beatdown, the Cumberland players found within themselves one last bit of courage. The Georgia Tech offense had already scored a touchdown, but Cumberland decided to make their heroic final stand to stop Georgia Tech from scoring the extra point kick. They planned a climb-the-ladder play, where teammates squat down to varying degrees to form a sort of humid pyramid. Then, the bravest player of the bunch would sprint up the makeshift staircase of bodies and leap over the line of scrimmage to block the kicked ball midair. For obvious reasons, this play has been illegal for almost a century. Cumberland's Vichy Woods volunteered to try and make the stop. The timing had to be perfect. When the center snapped the ball, Woods was already in motion. He stepped on one teammate, then another, climbing the proverbial ladder. He launched off the final teammate over the center who had just snapped the ball. The placeholder caught the snap and held it on the turf. Vichy Woods, now several feet in the air, stretched out his arms as the Georgia Tech kicker's foot made contact. That's the last thing he remembered. The ball shot off the turf and right into Vichy Woods' face. The deflected ball bounced out of bounds. Cumberland's hero's face was obliterated, but he blocked the kick. It was the only defensive stop Cumberland would make all day. All it cost Vichy Woods was a broken nose, two black eyes, and a tooth. The Georgia Tech kicker, despite already making a record-breaking amount of extra points, looked over to Coach Heisman nervously, expecting a grilling. However, Heisman was actually pleased. He had done the math in his head. With a couple more touchdowns, the final score would be a poetic capstone to his revenge. A 22-0 baseball blowout answered by a 222-0 football slaughter. Heisman got his touchdowns and got his revenge. The final seconds ticked off and the referee blew his whistle. The massacre was finally over. Georgia Tech fans cheered with a kind of ecstasy that can only come from the absolute absurd. Scoring 100 points was incredible. Scoring over 200 points was unthinkable. Georgia Tech teammates, staff, and fans all went wild, except John Heisman, who walked straight towards George Allen, who was essentially checking Cumberland players' pulses. Heisman's stoic demeanor remained unchanged, despite the jubilant celebration happening all around him. He simply held out an envelope to Coach Allen, who nervously took it. Heisman then said, quote, "I want to personally commend your team for such a fine display of courage," unquote. Inside the envelope was the check for $500. Among the chaos of the home team's record-breaking victory, the Cumberland players who had gone AWOL quietly returned to the sidelines. One of them had been hiding under a blanket behind Georgia Tech's bench. George Allen cashed the check at a nearby bank, and he and his wounded troops celebrated in an Atlanta saloon near the train station where they took the next train home. They were in rough shape, but happy to have survived the biggest beatdown in gridiron football history. The next day, some newspapers refused to print the final score, assuming it to be either a prank or a telegram typo. One sports writer described the massacre as, quote, "a game deplete of any apparent football virtues," unquote. Legendary sports writer Grantland Rice wrote, quote, "Cumberland's greatest offensive play of the game occurred when the fullback circled the right end for a 6-yard loss," unquote. Several all-time records were set in the game, the unique situation of a complete talent mismatch and such intended malice ensured many records set in the game will never, ever be broken. Here's some insane stats from the lopsided game. There were technically no first downs. Cumberland never got one, and for Georgia Tech, every play that gained a first down also gained a touchdown. Despite inventing the forward pass, Heisman never even had to use a pass play. Georgia Tech had 922 yards and 32 touchdowns. Cumberland totaled negative 42 yards and 9 turnovers. 97% of all plays took place in Cumberland territory. A game like this will never happen again. John Heisman continued to dominate coaching collegiate sports for decades. He won 7 conference championships, and once they invented the national title the year after the Cumberland Massacre, he won that too. He coached at several more universities across the country. He eventually retired to New York City, where he intended to write a complete history of gridiron football, but he died in 1936 before he could finish. The next year, Cumberland coach George Allen was actually drafted to fight in the First World War, but the armistice was signed before he even got to the front. After the war, he practiced law and got involved with politics. During the Second World War, he worked as a spokesperson for the Red Cross and served in the administrations of FDR, Truman, and Eisenhower. He was always quick with a joke and was often brought in to relieve the tension among post-war meetings. In 1946, Time magazine gave a nickname to each member of Truman's inner circle. Titles ranged from the professor, the banker, the gambler, or the lawyer. George Allen was dubbed the court jester. Allen later wrote a poorly titled autobiography of his time at the White House called Presidents Who Have Known Me. In it, he wrote that one tale that never failed to get a laugh was the harrowing survival story of the biggest blowout in football history. Historium was written, recorded, and produced by me, Jake Barton, in February of 2024. My main source for this episode was a book titled You Dropped It, You Pick It Up by Jim Paul. Very, very few copies were published, and it has been out of print since the 60s, so every copy I could find online was hundreds of dollars. However, I requested an interlibrary loan from my local library where I work, and within the month, I got the tattered old copy from none other than Cumberland University in Lebanon, Tennessee. The book was last checked out in 1999. Here's a fact that didn't make the episode. The play known as Climb the Ladder or the Pyramid Play was a dangerous and foolhardy trick play that was quickly banned. But there are some amazing pictures of it in action. In the late 1930s, Nazi Germany distributed copies of the image around Europe in magazines and posters as an example of the brutality of American sports. I'll have some of those pictures as well as many other relevant photos on a free post on Historium's Patreon page. And while you're there, for just $5, you can get access to every single Historium bonus episode. The most recent one is about the passenger pigeon, a bird that used to be so plentiful it darkened the skies, sometimes for days. That episode and every other bonus episode are available on Patreon for just $5. The link is right there in the show notes. As always, thanks for listening.